lungs laboring, feet slogging in the sandy soil, Kane, Bridget, and Grant reached the crest of the hill and stumbled to an unsteady halt. They stared down into a shallow, bowl-shaped depression, their minds not immediately comprehending what their eyes saw. At first glance, it appeared that four people, all of them with dark skin and hair, struggled to keep a small, shrieking boy from being drawn into a funnel-shaped hole by a length of gray vine. The vine, wrapped around the child's right leg, was stretched taut. Two adults gripped him by the arms and dug their heels into the ground, but judging by the grooves cut into the soil by their feet, they were slowly being dragged forward. While the Cerberus warriors watched in confusion, another vine whipped out of the hole and fastened itself around the boy's left ankle. A thin layer of ground burst upward. Through the shower of grit, Kane received a fragmented impression of a creature humping up through the sand. He snatched his auto pistol from his holster and kicked himself off the crest of the hill.
The Ouroboros!
As they ran down the face of the slope, a creature heaved itself from the hole. It resembled a garden slug, but its leprous gray mass, colored by splotches of tan, was over 12 feet long and nearly half that wide. A blunt, featureless head bobbed on the end of a rubbery neck. Two stalks jutted from the head, and they bore round eyes on tips that swiveled in different directions at the same time. The neck extended at least 4 feet and was almost as thick as the boy's entire body. Suddenly, a round, pulsing orifice opened on the underside of its head. Coiling and uncoiling tentacles surrounded the rim. More tentacles lashed out, whipping and flailing. The Cerberus warriors, Kane in particular, knew the creature from Outland's folklore. The Ouroboros Obscura, the giant mutant worm of the deserts. Anyone born in post-dark America had heard rumors of its existence drifting in from hell zones. Outlanders had sworn to the stories of the predatory beast, mutated and adapted to life underground. Several years before, in the alkaline deserts of Utah, Kane had very nearly been devoured by an Ouroboros. He knew how dangerous the creature could be, with a resilience that bordered on invulnerability. He, Bridget, and Grant took up positions around the mutant monster. The Ouroboros reacted to their arrival by rearing up, its circular mouth opening wide to reveal a ring of small, inward-pointing teeth like a lamprey's. The orifice glistened wetly. A tentacle shot out, missing Kane's face by a slender margin. Kane staggered on the uneven ground, brought up his Bren 10 and aligned the unprotected flesh of the creature's head and neck in front of the boar. His finger squeezed the trigger, and the pistol spit thunder and flame. The bullet sliced through one of the tentacles wrapped around the boy's leg. The giant slug reared back, lifted its blunt head, and with a slithering sound uncoiled the other tentacle from around the boy's ankle. The adults dragged him away as the Ouroboros twisted toward Kane. It opened its round maw wide, and a jet of colorless liquid flashed through the air. Kane ducked frantically, but some of the liquid splashed his cheek, and droplets spattered the lenses of his goggles. His skin instantly began to burn as if exposed to a hot coal. Arching its body, the Ouroboros plunged headfirst beneath the sand, and in a billowing puff of dust, disappeared. Bridget came quickly to Kane's side, wiping at the caustic liquid on his face with her bandana.
Is it gone?
I don't know. The one I dealt with in Utah was pretty tenacious.
Grant, his copperhead cradled in his arms, glanced toward the five people. They were all Hispanic and all very frightened. They wore simple clothing of white linen, pants and shirts that looked like a uniform. The left breasts of the shirts bore small insignia patches, a simple symbol of several concentric rings surrounding a black center. The single female among them looked very gaunt, her black hair a dry, hayrick tangle, her dark skin roughened by the sun. She also looked to be at least 5 months pregnant. Light glinted dully from the metal manacle affixed around her right ankle. The other adults wore similar shackles.
Slaves.
Runaways.
Slavery had been a common trade in the Outlands, but after the fall of the baronies, the Cerberus personnel had hoped the practice would become less widespread because it was less profitable with fewer buyers. Kane whirled, leading with his gun. The Ouroboros burst up from the ground, sand sifting down its mass of rubbery flesh. The thickly muscled flat tail of the creature flipped up and battered deep into Kane's midsection, slamming him off his feet and driving him against Bridget. Kane was only dimly aware of collapsing to the ground in a heap, but he knew the monster's open maw, dripping with acidic saliva, hovered above him. He forced his body into a roll. Grant fired his copperhead, the tri-burst homing in on the mutant's head. The rounds punched holes in its back amid little squirts of dark ichor. Shuddering ripples ran through the slug's gray skin, and it burrowed swiftly beneath the sand again, clouds of dust flying up from beneath it. Kane painfully rose, spitting out grit.
Did you kill the son of a...
Copperhead at his shoulder, Grant scanned the area, turning in a complete circle.
I don't know. Tagged it solid, though.
Bridget, gripping Kane's second Bren 10 auto pistol in a two-handed grip, looked in all directions.
I think it left.
I wouldn't count on it. What the hell kind of a thing is it, anyway? A mutated sandworm?
They felt a faint trembling beneath the soles of their boots. The Mexicans felt it as well and drew away. An elderly man held the boy in his arms. Kane, Bridget, and Grant were thrown from their feet when the Ouroboros suddenly burst up through the soil directly under them. Kane cartwheeled and landed hard on his back, the wind forcibly leaving his lungs. Jarred by the impact, his fingers lost their grip and his Bren 10 skittered away. He glimpsed both Grant and Bridget sprawling and rolling. The Ouroboros lunged at him, its round mouth gaping wide. Kane threw himself to the right, reaching frantically for his pistol, but a pair of tentacles snapped out and locked around his left leg, instantly constricting in painful grips. They dragged him toward the creature's open mouth. Clawing at the ground, Kane dug in his heels, but he continued to be pulled toward the creature.
Señor!
Turning his head, Kane saw a young man scooping up his pistol and tossing it to him underhanded. Kane snatched the weapon out of the air and aimed at the pulsating maw of the Ouroboros. At the same time he pulled the trigger, Bridget and Grant opened fire, instinctively shifting position to catch the creature's head in the apex of a triangulated crossfire. The rounds blew away the Ouroboros' eye stalks and ripped deep gouges in its rippling flesh. Black liquid drooled from the creature's mouth. The crushing pressure on Kane's leg subsided as the tentacles released. The body of the Ouroboros thrashed wildly like a worm impaled on a fisherman's hook. The giant worm writhed backward, working its way tail first into a hole. It squirmed, leaving a trail of ichor. They heard the crunching sound of its escape as it burrowed away. The ground lifted up in a curving ripple. Bridget, Grant, and Kane stood, weapons at the ready, waiting for it to return. Dirt and dust adhered to their sweat-slick faces. They looked at one another, lowered their goggles, then turned toward the Mexicans who huddled together, staring at them with wide, dark eyes. Kane glanced toward the young man who had thrown him his weapon and touched his brow with the barrel in a salute.
Gracias.
De nada.
Amigos.
The elderly man placed the boy on the ground and shuffled toward them, walking with a limp. Gray speckled his unkempt black hair. His wrinkle netted face held no particular expression, having much the same color and texture as the leather sandals on his feet.
We speak English. Thank you for your help. You saved my grandson, Ramon.
You're welcome. Do you live in that village over there?
We did, before it was destroyed.
How was it destroyed? By an earthquake?
Yes, an earthquake. We were returning to it, looking for any of our belongings that might have survived and could be salvaged.
Returning to it? Returning from where?
Mictlans.
Where's that?
It is not a place, senor. It is a who. You do not know of Mictlans?
Kane caught the flicker of recognition in Bridget's eyes.
No, we don't. You may have guessed that we're not from around here.
I'm Grant. This is Kane. That's Bridget, there. You're slaves?
Yes. Taken from our home by Mictlans and his diableros. Nearly a week ago, 32 of us were freed from bondage by the magic of Maruja. We are all that is left.
Who is Maruja? Or does that happen to be a what this time around?
No, Señor Kane. Maruja is our liberator. She is a very powerful bruja.
A what?
A witch, for lack of a better term.
I could have guessed.
Kane checked the position of the sun.
I don't think there's much point in going any farther today, Baptiste. We might as well make camp for the night.
I agree.
I saw how you reacted, Baptiste. Does the name Mictlans mean something to you?
Only mythologically. Mictlans was the god of the Aztec underworld.
You know, I almost said that.